Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Bijou Banter. In the Zoom studio, we got Orson Codd.
Hello.
Daniel McGregor-Horrier.
Hello.
And myself, Matthew Ha. And today, it is Tuesday, August 9th of 2022, and we're going to be talking about two films, one being a special that came out on August 5th, which is only a few days ago, that being Prey, the Predator prequel, and we're probably the only people on the planet going to be talking about this, but just to, just for giggles, we're going to talk about the Lego Star Wars Summer Vacation special on Disney Plus. And we're going to begin with Prey. And Prey is a prequel to the Predator franchise. And it, unlike any of the other ones, this one is pretty much not connected, with the exception of there being a Predator in it. It was directed by Dan Trachtenberg, and it stars Amber Midthunder, Dakota Beavers, and Dane DeLegro. And from IMDb, this is an origin story of the Predator in the world of the Comanche Nation 300 years ago, where a skilled female warrior named Naru protects her tribe against one of the first highly evolved predators to land on planet Earth. What do we think about this prequel?
Well, I really liked what Dan Trachten, I'm not really sure how to pronounce it, but he did the Cloverfield sequel couple of years ago, which was really good, surprisingly. And much like Prey, it's one of those ones where it doesn't really connect to the original. It just kind of has the title in it, and obviously with Prey it has the Predator. But in all honesty, I've never been big on the Predator movies in general. I think the first is okay, and then they did one with Adrian Brody probably about like maybe 10 years ago, which was not bad. I just remember a lot of it. But then Predator 2 is pretty bad in my opinion. It's like a bad TV episode that just happens to have a Predator in it. And then the Shane Black one, it was just not very good, but at least they had Keegan-Michael Key in it. And so this one I was very optimistic about because, again, kind of what you said, Matthew, is it doesn't really like need to be a part of the movies because it takes place, you know, 300 years ago or whatever. And I was very surprised. Like, it for a movie that's on a streaming service, which should have been theatrical now having seen the movie, it was great. It's not like a masterpiece by any means, but for a franchise that I've just always kind of felt like is fair, this really made me more intrigued with seeing more Predator movies in the future.
Yeah, so I actually did not hear about this film until I saw people writing about it on Letterboxd recently. And then when it came for the time to have us, like, you know, talk about it on Banter, I was like, okay, I'm going to watch it. I watched it last night. And I was actually pleasantly surprised. Like, I didn't really have many expectations for this sequel at all. And I didn't even know that it was like a so-called like standalone sequel or prequel to like Predator at all. So I was pretty intrigued. And I liked how like I really was pleasantly entertained with it. I think what really made the movie for me was Amber Midthunder's main performance. I think she did a great job in the role, and I really liked the Comanche, hopefully I'm pronouncing that right, the Comanche representation. And yeah, I mean, it was pretty cool. I think this is probably like the best Predator movie since the first one. And I think it was honestly really refreshing to see something like this. And yeah, I was very entertained by it.
I would not consider myself a Predator fan necessarily because I've only seen the first Predator from the 80s, which is a good movie. I think there's a lot of really creative ideas, but if we're comparing it to other action sci-fi films at the time, like specifically RoboCop, which came out the same year, I think Predator, it's good, but it's not, I didn't see it as anything spectacular. There's really great stuff in it, but I never saw the sequels just because I didn't really have much interest in it. I probably would have seen the 2018 one had it got better reception because it's directed by Shane Black, who did The Nice Guys, but I haven't heard very good things about it, so I had no interest. For Prey, I didn't know it was coming out until kind of recently, and when I heard that it was going to be a prequel, I'm like, okay, this doesn't seem like it has the best shot at being successful, because notably for horror prequels, there is a bit of a stigma against it. It's like, oh, it just seems kind of cheap to make money and connect it. And on top of it being released on Hulu exclusively and not in theaters, that only kind of soured my anticipation for it. But then I saw the reviews, and Prey is currently sitting at a 92% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is admittedly very high. And I was curious at that point, I'm like, okay, I gotta check this movie out then. And I was pleasantly surprised. I thought it was quite entertaining and good. And even though I haven't seen the sequels, this is, at least in my opinion, on par with Predator. And it's so interesting because as a problem that prequels and sequels have is that they try too hard to connect itself to the original that made it successful, which is kind of the point of sequels. They're there to make more money and also strengthen the brand. But what's so unique about Prey is that it has basically nothing to do with any of the Predator films. It takes place in a time period that is far distant from any of the other films. And the setting and representation is just so unique and original. You don't really see movies like this that have this very primal feel mixed with sci-fi technology. In a weird way, it reminded me of The Northman in a way with a Predator in terms of that sci-fi angle. And it's just really interesting to see. I think some points don't work, like particularly some of the effects are pretty iffy. There's some parts where the Predator looks really good, but then some of the animals look absolutely terrible. But I think what also holds it together is Amber Midthunder's performance, as she spends so much of the movie by herself, but also interacting with other members of the tribe. And it's a very different type of sci-fi action film that's very hard to pinpoint. It almost exists in its own canon, but that's what makes it so unique and able to stand out.
Yeah, I thought one of the things that was very cool to see that we don't see a lot in science fiction films is when you take a character who doesn't have a lot of resources, and then you take the villain who has a lot of resources, and the hero is using what they have to their advantage. Especially like in this scenario where it's like, okay, well, you know, in what was the year, like 1719, it's not really like they have, you know, the automatic guns or the giant Rambo knives. I mean, I'm sure they did, but, you know, where these characters are coming from, they didn't. So to see the way she, like, you know, took her axe and she put like the rope around it and kind of made it come back to her like a batarang in a sense, I thought that was pretty cool. And then seeing that put up against the Predator's technology was really like visually stunning and super creative. I thought that's something that they really used to their advantage with this, was the kills and like the way the Predator fought was very different from what it's been in the past.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like it's much more like rooted in like this, like Matthew said, this like primal reality in some way. I mean, I think, because I mean, obviously, like back then, like 1700s, you didn't have all like the AK-47s or semi-automatics that like they had in the original Predator. So it was very interesting that they really took this approach as a time period. But to be honest, I really like, it's kind of like with Skyfall, the James Bond movie, where they basically simplify the weapons a bit and make it like much more tense, because, you know, the Predator has advanced technology while the main character has like only a few weapons that are pretty like aged compared to like what the Predator has. So it makes like the action a little bit more intense, and they really take a creative route with like both the Predator and the main character's action scenes. Like, especially like the scene where they're basically captured by the French in some way. And I don't think this is a spoiler. I mean, I think people can kind of gather what this is, but they get captured by the French, and the French want to kill the Predator. And then obviously like the French don't listen, and they decide to, you know, go head on and just use them as bait in some way. And the Predator basically like obviously wins that battle because the French are in over their heads, and the Predator has just such interesting kills. Like, it actually makes it pretty like, it's kind of like how in the original Predator, where basically you saw how intimidating these things are. And they really took full advantage of that. And I really like how the main character really like works her way around the Predator's actions and, you know, outsmarts the Predator in some way, which I found was very creative. And I think it really made the main character much stronger that way.
One question I have, and this is actually really interesting about Prey, is that on Hulu, there's an option to watch the film in two different languages. The default setting is the film plays in regular American English, but there's also an option to watch the film in the Comanche language, which that's the version I watched, because I read just on various sources that they said that is considered the more definitive version. I don't know if that's confirmed by the director, but it seems that people think it's a bit more authentic. What version did you guys watch?
I just did the regular English version, but I've heard the same thing. It's just that it's better as well, the Comanche dub.
Yeah, I actually turned on the Comanche dub like halfway through, and I think it worked much better in my opinion. And it's kind of like when Squid Game was such a big thing, where Netflix had the automatic default to have the English dub on, which I honestly, subs, not dubs, because I feel like when you do like a dub, it can actually take away from the actors' performances. Because all you hear is like the voice actors trying to replicate those performances, and you don't really feel the same like weight of emotions from the characters. And so, but considering it's like a Comanche dub, I felt more effective. And I think it actually like made it feel like, you know, you're actually discovering a new perspective in some way. I think what really helps this movie is definitely like the representation of Comanche or Comanche heritage. And I think it works out incredibly well when you have that dub on there.
It felt more authentic. And
yeah,
I think, especially because this movie also has, you know, characters who are from Europe coming into the American land, having the native Comanche tribe speak in their language, I think only adds to like that sort of conflict too. I think I did watch the opening scene in English and the Comanche dub just to compare. And it's interesting because I think they filmed the movie in English and then they ADR'd the Comanche language, which is why the dub itself, it's well, acted in terms of using their voice, but the way it syncs up, it doesn't really match. Like there's some times when the characters' mouths or lips are moving, but there's no dialogue coming out, or it's like delayed. So it seems like they filmed it in English, and either way, I think you would still get the same experience out of it, but having it in the original language, I think, adds more to the historical accuracy and authenticity. It's another bizarre comparison. It's kind of like Passion of the Christ, because Passion of the Christ was it was filmed in like the dialogue spoken is not English, and for some reason I'm blanking what the language is, but
it's like Latin and
it's
way.
Like yeah, it's early Latin, which is what is how they spoke back then. But every single movie based on the Bible has the character speaking in English just because that's what we're accustomed to, but it lacks the authenticity. So I didn't think I was going to mention Passion of the Christ while talking about a Predator movie, but that's the comparison I can make. And it's nice to see that, because it is a risk that they took, and I don't think they would have released it in the Comanche language in theaters, but the fact that it's on a streaming service and you have that option is a nice feature. So even though they took away that theatrical feeling, they almost like added something else in place of it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like the element I do like is just like, you know, even like without the dialogue, like the movie is still like visually telling in a lot of ways. Like it gets so much, like it gets across so much character without even having to even like use dialogue from the characters. Cause when you look at it, like apart from like some interactions with like the brother or the rest of the tribe, like it's not very like dialogue focused as it is visually focused. But I think, you know, the performances really give across like those emotions pretty quickly and give across like a lot of things without, you know, having to say anything. And I think that's what makes it work for me. And I think dub or not, like it's still visually effective. Like it's not like perfect visual storytelling, but I think it still works out, like, you know, telling you what's going on without even having to like spoon feed it to you.
Yeah, I think one thing I also really like too is that the Predator movies are, most of them besides the Alien versus Predator films, that are rated R. And I like how this film, the only reason why it's rated R is because of its violence and gore. It is very grisly and bloody at times too, but it didn't feel like it was there just to shock. I like how it had this kind of rawness, kind of like how the Northman had a lot of its violence and brutality come from just the way they fight. It's not clean or graceful. It's very rough and it's very visceral and intense. And when you see it, obviously the Predator, how it uses its own, how it plays by its own rules and just like tears things apart, that's a given. But I also like how the humans fight in a way where it brings out this a different type of fighting style that isn't really seen. And it also, it does play a lot with the human emotions too, just because there is a lot, the conflict is so strange and bizarre. It's like, how do you wrap your head around something that you can't even see? Like, how do you describe what a predator looks like in a time where there isn't even really electronic technology? It's just, it's an idea that has a lot of potential. And I think they do tap into that very well, just because it's so different and it's not what you expect.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was surprised how gnarly this was with some of the kills. Like, you know, there's one that in a way involves a tree and a shield, and there's one that involves a bear trap. And I was like, whoa, this is, I mean, you would have expected some kind of kills, but, you know, again, I don't consider these kills spoilers, but it's like where the predator stabs someone. It's like, okay, you expect that kind of thing is going to happen. But like, they get kind of what, you know, we've all said is they get really creative with this. And I, you know, it was just nice to see this refreshing take, because in the past, it's just felt very, you know, uninspired. But this felt like, especially with the time period this was set in, they really used their creative minds and came up with some pretty cool contraptions.
It's also nice too that, unlike a problem with like kind of other like monster type movies where it's like you have this non-human entity as the villain, they focus so much on the monster, and the monster is interesting just visually, but it's like, well, where's the character in that? What I like about Prey is that they focus a lot, mostly on the humans and their story. Because if anything, a lot of the conflict and the tension comes from their relationships with the tribe. So to see that angle, and given that Comanche representation, which really hasn't been done in sort of like a sci-fi story, sci-fi horror type genre storytelling, it's very, I don't know if I want to say groundbreaking, but maybe it is actually, maybe it is groundbreaking, because we've never seen that before.
Yeah. And I think what it also does that is pretty effective, it does take a lot of like, what made the original so good. Cause I love the original. I think the original is probably like one of it's like a really good sci-fi action movie. I think it's relatively solid. But the thing about the original is that it wasn't afraid to really show the brutality in many of the scenes. And you know, it's probably also Arnold Schwarzenegger's best performance, in my opinion, but that's just me. But I think it definitely just was able to keep itself, like, you know, rooted in this like very like brutal and grim reality. Because, you know, like, this thing hunts and it's not gonna stop. Like, that's basically what the Predator is. Which is why, you know, people like those Predator versus Aliens movies or whatever, because those films like are very much like the idea about, like, you know, these things really hunting like people down, and they won't stop. And I kind of like that. Prey really takes a lot from the original, but still able to stand on its own, like both visually and representation wise because like the first one was very much like Vietnam inspired, and you know, it basically took a lot probably from Rambo as well, and a lot of like early like late 70s Vietnam films. And so I feel like, you know, so obviously like that can kind of be seen as a product of its time, but Prey really feels like, you know, it feels like, you know, it's much different visually and still takes the elements from the original, but it's still able to have fun with it, and, you know, be creative in some way. I think I wouldn't say it's like shot in the way like say The Revenant is, because obviously The Revenant is a much different film and is, I think, much more grander. But I think this one is not afraid to like really take you back to like that grim reality that the first film rooted itself in.
What I'm curious to know is that if this movie were to be released in theaters and have a wide release, do you think the reception would have been as strong as it received on Hulu? Because a lot of people are talking about it's like if regardless of reviews, people were predicting that if this were to be released in theaters, even if we weren't in the middle of pandemic, it would likely be a box office bomb, oddly enough, which I could see.
I don't know. I think it would still be looked upon pretty favorably. Probably is like a, I mean, not to base everything around tomatoes, probably around like the 92, 93% where it is. I highly doubt that, but I could see if it were released in theaters, probably ending up somewhere around like the high 60s, like 68 or like, mid 70s. I could be somewhere there. A box office bomb. I mean, I don't know what the production was on this movie. I'm sure it was maybe a little expensive given the time period, but I don't know. I think it would have done fine because is there really like anything big that's coming out right now besides this? Typically, there's always one horror movie always before like school starts. Like 3 years ago, it was Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, or 4 years ago, it was Slender Man. And I'm sure this would have done fine. It just kind of would have, I hate to say come and gone, but it would have been like a movie where you had to see it in the moment if you're a horror fan or science fiction fan to really like it. And then some people probably would have seen it. And then it would have come to streaming, a couple months later, and people would have been like, oh, that's really good.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like I don't know, because I did not hear about this film until people started talking about it, like on Letterboxd or Rotten Tomatoes. And so I it might be just a detriment to like the advertising because the film went to straight to theaters, and I still have not heard of it. I don't know if it would have been successful. Because I feel like it's, and I think like having it on streaming might have been like the best idea because I don't think that this film wasn't really heavily marketed like The Gray Man was, obviously. Because obviously, The Gray Man is much more like attached to like bigger name actors and a bigger name directors. And Prey, you just got the guy who did the Cloverfield sequel and the pilot episode of The Boys, which oh, The Boys is a great show, and everybody should watch that if they can, and if they would like to. And it's also like it was didn't really like wasn't heavily advertised. Like nobody knew about. I don't think anybody really heard about Prey until like the reviews started coming out. So I don't know if this film would have been successful in theaters. I mean, no, if it was like advertised much better and was able to be like the advertising for The Gray Man, I think the film would be like moderately successful. But I think with like with the fact I only heard about this film like about a week ago, I don't think it would have been as like successful if it was like just straight to theaters.
Do you think maybe the reason the promoting job for this film wasn't like, I mean, I knew about it because this is the kind of film, these the films I like, but I will admit, like, it wasn't like the forefront of big movies coming out right now. Do you think maybe it wasn't pushed that forefront because it technically is a Disney movie? And on some regions, it is on Disney Plus instead of Hulu. Do
I
you think
think
maybe
too,
Disney's
because
like,
well, oh, sorry.
no, do you just think Disney was like, well, we know this is going to be, successful, but it's just not our kind of brand. We inherited this from Fox, but we still have to put this out because we believe in it in a sense. You know what I'm saying?
I think too, because Predator hasn't, the last few Predator movies have not really been critically acclaimed anyway. And especially because this, as a prequel, it's so vastly different. It doesn't have any major stars or anything. And also, like, based on the, I don't know what the budget was for this movie. It's not currently listed, but I don't think it cost, it didn't look like it was like a super expensive movie either. So maybe Disney was like, we're not really sure what, how this film will play out, we'll just kind of release it. In my opinion, I think they were predicting this was going to be like a 30% Rotten Tomatoes type movie, which given everything that was going on, that was going against it, including Hulu exclusive, lack of notable stars, and the fact that the last Predator movie was not received well, this people are probably like, eh, it's probably not gonna, it'll probably be another dud.
Well,
But
it's
I
interesting
think
because I don't know, in this day and age, you have to look at some movies where if it's day and date, that's interesting because that to me is as bad as releasing a movie in January, in my opinion. But sometimes when I don't think Prey was ever meant to go straight to theaters, I think it was always going to be an exclusive to Hulu. that I was kind of like, okay, we'll have to see. It's not great, but just because it was always going to be there kind of said to me, there's a chance. So you're saying there's a chance. So yeah, I think it turned out well.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think it still turned out well regardless, like whether or not it was gonna be released in theaters or streaming. But I just sometimes I think, like, I don't know. I mean, because I'm thinking about other Fox films that were released under Disney thus far, like The Kingsman, for example, that was heavily marketed for a while.
Bob's Burgers movie.
Yeah, and so that was pretty much the way in. So I think, like, if that can get heavily marketed, why can't this? And I think, like, I actually agree. Like, maybe they saw, like, the reviews for, like, the Shane Black Predator and just thought, like, nah, I mean, we're just gonna probably just toss straight to Hulu because we don't want to, like, waste the money to, like, bring it to the theaters and waste the money on advertising. So this film is pretty much, like, swept under the rug, unfortunately, which it's a shame. Like, it shouldn't be swept under the rug. It's kind of like, what was that movie we watched that, like, it was Quiet Man or something, or
Oh,
something
the
like
Empty
that.
Man.
Yeah, Empty Man. Like, how that was kind of swept under the rug after Disney bought Fox and it bombed at the box office. So I feel like Disney didn't want to make that mistake, maybe, but I don't know. And I feel like this was just pretty much swept under the rug, unfortunately.
You guys think there will be a sequel?
You know what? I would love to see if they I don't know if they would do this, and it might be a victim of its own success because it might become too repetitive. If you just have a Predator movie in different periods of
Yeah.
time where like maybe the next one it will be in like Japan where samurais discover a predator
Ooh,
or something.
that
That
would be
would be
pretty
really
sweet,
cool.
actually. I
Just
love
do
that.
that. This movie proves that you don't really have to connect the Predator franchise to the first film or any of the sequels. You can diverge and just basically make a bunch of these. I don't want them to like overdo it because then it's gonna lose the magic of it. But if they do something like that, I'm all for it then. So yeah, dude. Put
Yeah, I
it put
mean, I think.
predators in like weird locations. Put one in like, I don't know, in Africa or in like Antarctica or something. It'll basically be the thing.
I
So
mean, I think, like, the creature that the Predator is like intriguing enough, like, where you can actually just switch time periods or locations. And I'm actually all for, like, the whole samurai idea. That would be
I would be.
sweet. That'd be great. I mean, I would see that in a heartbeat because,
Yeah,
I
put
mean,
that in
and
theaters.
plus, like, if you get a good director behind the camera too, like Trachtenberg is, because apparently this is like his third directorial effort, if you don't like if you count the pilot of The Boys. Like, I think it works out. So I think it's incredible, like, that this guy has been pretty consistent with, like, his content thus far. And so maybe just, like, getting a director or at least having him oversee everything would be great, just to kind of, like, keep that same vibe that this film has.
I wouldn't be shocked if there's a sequel to this because I don't want to say any spoilers, but since I've seen all the Predator movies, they blatantly do something that directly ties in with one of the other movies. And I'm like, you can't put that thing in the movie and then not explain like how it doesn't connect to the other Predator movie. And so I don't know, I just feel like they have to, instead of just saying, oh, well, now we're with Samurai and the thing also happens to be here too. That I don't know. I just feel like, again, with where they set it up, you have to say how it gets from point A to point B.
Yeah, I guess only time will tell. It seems like, honestly, given how well received this one is, I could see a sequel or another prequel, perhaps. And if it's gonna be like this, I'm for it then. But unfortunately, we are just about out of time for our discussion on Prey. So, final thoughts.
I think it's good. Again, kind of what I said at the beginning, I'm not the biggest diehard Predator franchise fan, but this was relatively, not relatively, it was very enjoyable. I liked what the director was able to do. He, again, kind of like Daniel said, has proven that he's very good at this kind of stuff. And the action was great. The characters were great. It sucks it didn't get a theater release, but maybe it was better on Hulu for right now, and who knows what the future will hold. I'm going to give Prey a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I was very impressed with this film. I think this is probably the best Predator film since the first one. And probably the most entertaining one since Alien versus Predator. But anyway, I think this film really does a good job taking elements of the original Predator, but still having enough. Let me rephrase. It takes enough elements from the original Predator to really stand on its own, and I think it works out incredibly well. I really, Amber Mid Thunder carries this movie, and I think this film hopefully can lead to more Predator content in the future. And so, like Orson, I'm gonna give this a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, it was quite solid. It's one of those films that I basically had no expectations going into it, and I came out quite impressed. And it's not like it's a masterpiece or anything like that. It's not anything like amazing, but I think for what it does and given the chances and risks it took, I think it was a very successful attempt at bringing new life into a franchise that has quite a bit of dud since the first film. And yes, it is probably the best Predator film since the original, which came out back in 1987. So it's been about 35 years, but we finally got another Predator film worthy of the original. So with that said, I'm also going to give it a 7 out of 10, and it's streaming on Hulu. Check it out if you would like to. Now we're going to transition from one Disney-owned streaming service to the other Disney-owned streaming service called Disney Plus, where there is a special on there called the Lego Star Wars Summer Vacation. And because we talked about the Lego Star Wars holiday special and the Halloween special, we figured, of course, we have to talk about this one. And I think we're the only people that are actually going to devote podcast and radio time to this special. Yeah, so basically the plot, I mean, I guess the cast, it's a lot of the regular Lego Star Wars voice actors, but it includes, I guess, some of the recognizable names like Anthony Daniels, Billy Dee Williams, Kelly Marie Tran, and Weird Al Yankovic was in it, which I actually didn't know until just now. But basically the plot, I guess if you want to call it a plot, it's basically three short films strung together. From IMDb, Finn's plan to spend summer vacation with his friends goes wrong when he's separated from his group, and that's basically three short stories interconnected to give some moral about friendship. So yeah, what do we think?
Well, I also want to give a shout out to who's also in the special, Ross Marquand and Thomas Lennon. So that was fun to see them pop up in there. They actually made this kind of watchable. But I mean, we just watch these because they're kind of fun to talk about. It's got to keep the trend going. It's probably the weakest of all the three we've seen so far, just because like I get why they wanted to do it. But at least with the other two, there was like a holiday theme to it, so it kind of made it fun to watch around that time of year. This, like, I don't know. I feel like you could watch any time if that makes sense. I get it, summer thing. Maybe you couldn't watch it during the winter season, whatever. But yeah, I mean, there are a couple like, you know, when you hear something funny and you're like, oh, that's kind of funny. That's all you really get from this. There's no laugh out loud stuff. And yeah, it's a kid's thing, but it's at least it was under 50 minutes, so that was kind of nice.
These Lego Star Wars specials are pretty interesting. I mean, I think you know what, there is a certain charm to like the CG Lego Star Wars things. I think like although like yeah, they're all kid friendly in most ways. They're pretty much like harmless fun. I think that's what they really are. They don't really do anything to like alienate the audience like the other Star Wars films do. At least the ones under Disney, but I think it just has fun with with its premise, and obviously this is just another one of those. It's not really much I can really say about it. I mean, I'm not gonna like go online and just say like this is one of the greatest like specials of all time. It's just a very kid-friendly special, and I think it works. It stays in its lane, and I think it enjoys what it is, and I don't really have an issue with it.
It's good for children, I'd say. It's good if you want to just show your kids something really short and simple. And it's like you could show your kids something far worse, but yeah, I agree with Orson. Out of the three Lego Star Wars specials in this trilogy, this is probably the weakest. And it's because, like what Orson said, the holiday theme was there, so at least gives some potential. And yes, summer vacation, I guess, for some people is a holiday. It's more of a time of year. But there's not many things you could really do with that to make like a 45 minute long special. And even the Halloween special, which we talked about, was guilty of that same flaw, and that had Halloween attached to it, where it's like you can actually have a lot more creative things. This one, if you didn't even have the summer vacation theme and just said like, if you just did like 3 Lego Star Wars shorts, it'd be the same thing pretty much. There's nothing really about it that ties in necessarily to summer, other than the fact that it's like, oh, they're all on vacation in these short stories. But yeah, I really don't have much to say, because it's not the most engaging. It's the least engaging out of all of them. Like, it's by far the most boring, and the stories aren't very good. The one thing I found really funny is the fact that the vacation that Finn spends on with his family is the Galactic Star Cruiser that's at Walt Disney World, where they charge you thousands of dollars to spend 2 nights on. So that was kind of interesting that it's basically a commercial for a failed Disney product. So
yeah, I actually I don't know. There's something interesting about like that Disney attraction. I mean, for those who don't know, as Matthew mentioned before, Walt Disney World made a Star Wars hotel that
it's a cruise ship on land, basically. That's what it is.
Yeah, cruise ship on land, basically, like, I don't know, like one of those lockout type areas. Where, like, you know, like when you're kids and you go to like the local church or something and you stay within that building for about 24 hours. That's basically
it's quarantine but fun. That's what it is. That's how I
it's basically the Galactic Star Cruiser from Hollywood Studios. And I've never been on it. I'm broke. I can't be on it.
If you want to pull out your college tuition and fund that, go spend like $6,000 for 2 nights for a family of 4. It's absurd. So
yeah, I mean, and so like really the Galactic Star Cruise, I mean, I saw videos. I see like a lot of like people, like I was like, okay, how bad is this thing? And then I look into it, it's like, wow, this is the most corporate feeling like thing from Disney I've ever seen. And like you feel so bad because the cast members are trying so hard, but everything just looks so fake, and everything is just by a very strict schedule.
It's not their fault. It's not the cast member's fault though. It's the executives. Yeah, when I heard they were going to do it, I was like,
are the hardest work.
Yeah. When I heard they were going to do it, I'm like, oh, this actually seems really, really cool. But then they were building this, and they probably lost a crap ton of funding because this was during the pandemic. And it just looks so cheap. It's just, there's a lightsaber like mini game that you play that's basically the equivalent of pointing your remote at the television screen. It's just so cheap. And then they transport you to the Galaxy's Edge theme park in basically a truck. A truck that's like disguised as a ship, but it's basically if you look at pictures on Twitter, it's literally like a U-Haul truck. Anyway,
and it's a giant U-Haul truck that's like carrying like 50 people. It's insane.
I guess what we're talking about right here is kind of emblematic of the special itself, is that it's just not interesting to really talk about, that we already went on to another subject. But I don't know. It's like,
I mean,
I can't be too mad about it. It's not terrible, but I have nothing to say about it, basically.
They should keep doing more. Yeah. No, they should do like a Valentine's one next.
Mm-hmm. A back to school special.
You know, there's going to be one next year, probably, hopefully. Like, I hope, as part of me thinks, like, why do we watch these things? It's like, well, it's kind of fun to keep this tradition up. Now we've had one in 2020, 2021, and now 2022. We got to have one in 2023, which do Valentine's. Just do that. I don't know if they'd want to do Easter, because that's like really closely related to a religion, but maybe religion. They could. I don't know.
I mean, there's a lot of religious themes in Star Wars. Ramadan. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, if you want to be ethnically inclusive, you can do Star Wars Ramadan, Star Wars Hanukkah. Yeah. I don't know.
Do the Lego Star Wars.
Anything could happen.
Do the Lego Star Wars Tax Day special. Oh, wait, they did. It's called The Phantom Menace with the Taxation and Trade Federation talk. Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I don't know. I guess like one thing I did find somewhat like humorous about it is the, I don't know, how Kylo Ren kind of acts like a teen in one of the stories. And it's just
last one.
And he's just like a whiny teenager. I'm guessing I found that a little bit funny. And then it's like apparently they went on family vacation before he was sent off to be taught by Luke and the Last Jedi. So it's like, man, that I'm guessing that must have been the best family vacation ever, because now he's looking at back on that vacation like, man, I should have stayed there.
There was a review on Letterboxd I saw that said something to the effect of, like, to all you Star Wars fanboys out there, these Lego specials are more canon than all those novels and, like, comics that got retconned, you know, 10 years ago or something. Oh, gosh.
I know. I mean, personally, I like some of those. I mean, I liked
Those are good.
Yeah, like, they're good, like, canon. I mean, they used to be canon, but I'm kind of sad that they're not. But either way, like, you know, we still got Clone Wars out of it. But I don't know. It's, like, weird, like, just seeing, I don't know, like, somebody, like, going on a family vacation before they go on to, like, the biggest step into life, which, I mean, yeah, like, college and stuff like that. But this is, like, Jedi school, and this is a thing that kills them for the future. So it's like, wow.
Daniel, if you like that kind of stuff, I can give you a perfect movie where it's about a family going on vacation and then terrible things happen. It's called Funny Games. Don't look into it.
Oh, Funny Games. Yeah,
awesome. Just go watch Funny Games.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's a good movie to watch with the family.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably the biggest problem I have with this one, more so than any of the other ones, like, the holiday special was good because at least that had one story basically connected throughout 45 minutes. The Halloween special was segmented, but it's a Halloween special. Like, if you watch, like, Twilight Zone or, like, any class, or, like, Simpsons Treehouse of Horror, that's all anthologies. This one, it just has such a, the story is so loosely connected that it's barely a story. Like, Finn basically invites his friends to go on the Galactic Star Cruiser. He probably paid 6,000. What's the currency that Rey uses in Force Awakens? The quarter portions. That's what they call it. He probably paid 6,000 quarter portions to go on that cruise. And then he's like, everyone wants to do their stuff on their own. And then he encounters different characters, like the ghost of Obi-Wan. And he's like, oh, I was on Tatooine and I made a friend on my vacation or something. And just like, okay, is this canon? Or, like, what does this mean? And I don't remember, what was the second story? Because I'm blank. Is that the Darth Vader
one?
Okay,
that was, like, the one where Darth Vader and Palpatine go to a beach and Weird Al shows up. Like, that's really what
Which I didn't even know was Weird Al.
Yeah, I didn't know that was Weird Al either.
And that's I love Weird Al. Weird Al. If I can't recognize Weird Al in your movie or short, then, you know, something's wrong. So, and then the third one, I kind of enjoyed that one because it had Kylo Ren in it and he was just acting like a whiny teen. He had so many insecurities building up in him. Yeah. And, but then there's like, what's the moral, I guess, of this special? It's just like, that's why I was kind of struggling. It's like, okay, vacation is best spent time with, you know, your friends and family and loved ones. But when you go on vacation, it's like, you still want, sometimes people want alone time. They want to get away from their friends and family and, like, go somewhere by themselves. So it's like, I don't even know what the point of everything was.
Yeah, it's like, what, they're all going to go off on separate paths afterward. And it's like, okay, I mean, okay. Like, oh yeah, like, Poe has X-Wing training camp. And it's like, it's a very child, like, it is definitely a child thing. Because, like, I'm guessing this is probably the most character-like, I don't know, like, any of, like, the Disney sequel Star Wars characters have ever had. Like, Poe is very, like, freaking worried about, you know, keeping up on a schedule, like, doing everything, like, to a schedule, which is actually, like, going to the Disney parks now, apparently. But, yeah. You know, that's, like, his biggest worry. And then it's like, okay, I'm guessing this gave Poe more character than he ever had in, like, the Star Wars sequel trilogy, which is very interesting. And then, I don't know, it's just, it's weird. Like, it's just a weird thing. But then again, I'm not the target audience for it.
Yeah. But should that be an excuse, though? Should that be an excuse, like, oh, it's like, we're not the target audience, so does that give it a pass? Like, I don't think it's, like, very good.
So?
Because no, because this, but the holiday special was better though. The holiday special was meant for children, but I enjoyed that, like, pretty okay.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, I find that argument to be kind of, I have issues with the argument. I understand why people do it, but at the same time, it's like, I don't think that should mean, like, we should excuse not good stuff for children, because there's better Lego Star Wars stuff out there, like Revenge of the Brick and the Search for R2-D2. Those shorts on the Lego website from, like, 2008. Were better than this.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah, those are great. Those are great.
The Padawan Menace.
I don't know. I feel like these, like, you know, they're fine shorts. Like, they're not meant to be like the most perfect thing ever. I think they're just like, obviously, I mean, for what they are, like I said, like the Lego Star Wars shorts always have like a good sense of humor to them because, you know, they don't exactly have to be like officially canon in some way. And they don't have to like abide by like the overarching plot of like the films or whatever. They kind of do their own thing, which, you know, I appreciate. Like, they did their own thing with a lot of these and they just kind of have fun with it, which is, I'm guessing that's like a plus for me, I guess.
Yeah,
But
I will say, I don't even, I'm trying to remember if there's anything else that really stuck out for me with this viewing. I don't really have much else to add.
I mean,
no,
the
there's not
cruise ship
much.
looks much better than the one at Disneyland, that's for sure.
The cruise ship.
Oh
Oh,
well, yeah, it's Star Cruise or whatever. Yeah,
yeah,
looks
I will
much
say
better. I
this.
think people.
I think I enjoyed this more than the 2008 Clone Wars movie because at least this animation style was a bit more appealing. The animation
Yeah.
style in the 2008 Clone Wars movie is repugnant, and that oddly
Yeah,
enough,
but
that was
hey, I mean,
basically a
it
series of.
improved
It
though.
improved, yeah, but it's like even then, the Clone Wars movie was basically a series of just it was just three different episodes stitched together to a movie with no cohesive flow.
Yeah.
At least this one had something kind of connecting everything together, whereas that movie didn't.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, I
Yeah,
mean,
and it's better than
most
the
definitely.
prequels. It's better than the prequels. I'll give them that, except for Revenge of the Sith. So,
Better than Rise of Skywalker, maybe. Better.
yeah, no, it's better than Rise of Skywalker. So,
Yeah.
yeah,
Rise.
I guess if I were to do my definitive ranking of every single Star Wars related bit of media, this would probably be l mid to low tier. It's not the worst of the worst. So, yeah, you got anything else to add? Because I don't.
Is it better than like that Ewok adventure, like that TV special they had in the 80s or whatever?
The
Maybe.
Ewok
Yeah,
adventure.
there's like an Ewok movie.
Oh,
Yeah, just
those.
like.
Oh, yeah, no, it is
Yeah.
because those were so boring that I forgot they existed. Thank you, Daniel. Yeah, oh my
I
gosh. Those, at least
love to
those.
remind you that things exist.
Yeah, dude, I remember when those came out on Disney Plus. I was like, oh, I could finally watch these because I remember seeing Chris Stuckman's review for it, and they were so hard to find on DVD. And it's like, all right, cool, I could watch these. I'm just like, I would have rather just watch paint dry, honestly, because there's no entertainment value. At least the holiday special was like so ridiculous and dumb that it was kind of ironically funny. Whereas those Ewok movies were just really pointless. And I don't even know
Yeah.
if they're canon anymore either. So it's like,
I don't even know if they were intentionally supposed to be canon. Maybe George Lucas wanted them to be, but I don't know. He shoved those things so far under the rug that he
Hey, but
just
he at
wants
least
them to be
released it.
forgotten.
He at least released it on DVD and streaming, unlike the holiday special.
Holiday
So,
special, he was just personally ashamed of. Like, that's his. Well,
says
he
the
was
man who
personally
made Jar
ashamed.
Jar Binks.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very
Anyway.
true.
Well, I got nothing else to add, so final thoughts.
I mean, these are just kind of fun to watch and talk about. There is a little bit of like nostalgia. It brings me back to when I was really into Lego stuff, 10 years ago or something. Like I could see this being something I would watch with my friends or whatever. But yeah, it's just, I don't know. I'm not the target audience for this. We just kind of watch them just because we've done the other two. Part of me kind of hopes there's another one that will be fun to talk about in 2023, but I guess we'll see. There's not really many holidays left they could do unless they just decide to do like regular, 30 to 40 minute like TV specials, which could be interesting, I guess. But yeah, I feel bad rating this because again, I'm not the target audience, but I'm just gonna go 4 out of 10 just because it was my least favorite of the three, and there wasn't really too much of a story to it, and the story they did try to do just kind of felt like obsolete, like inconsequential. But yeah, I'm just going 4 out of 10. It's I don't know, it's okay.
I don't know. After watching this, I think this is one of the specials of all time. I think that's how
One of
I
the
describe
specials.
it. One of the specials of all time. It's like, what's the greatest movie of all time? I think
Morbius.
Citizen
Yeah,
Kane
Morbius.
is one of the movies of all time. I mean, that's how I describe this. It's like, I mean, it's just a fine, like, Star Wars, Lego Star Wars, right? I mean, these things have always had like a good sense of humor to them, and they're very self-aware about what they are. Like, they know who they're appealing to, and I think it works. I think they do a pretty fine job of what they're given. And yeah, I mean they're just fine shorts, and this is kind of just one of them. So I don't really have too much to say about it. I don't even know if I even should give this a rating because I, like I said, I'm not even. I mean, I'm not the target audience, but if I did, I'm guessing maybe like if I was a kid, maybe like 5 out of 10, 6 out of 10, maybe. I don't know. I mean, just be sure not to go on the Galactic Star Cruiser if you don't want to.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know.
Honestly, watching videos of people like ripping on the Galactic Star Cruiser was more entertaining because it was kind of funny. I'm not like mad about this or anything, but it's just like it was nothing. Like I genuinely forgot I watched it immediately after finishing it. And I was just like, well, we're probably gonna talk about this on banter. I have time to kill. Let's watch this. And it was pretty pointless. Like it's not terrible. It's not Empire Strikes Back, but it was harmless fluff. You could probably just put your kid in front of it, but yeah, it left no impact on me. Not that the score really matters, but I guess I would just give it a 4. And that's just being kind of generous because it's like, yeah, it's still the Lego brand of humor, but it's not, if we're judging this on, if we're gonna rate the Lego Star Wars Holiday Special trilogy on Disney Plus, this is easily the worst out of all of them. So yeah,
Right.
4 out of 10, but the rating basically is not important at all. So that wraps
Gotcha.
up this episode of Bijou Banter. Tune in next time where we'll probably be back in Iowa all together, and we'll probably talk about just like summer retrospective, a catch up of everything we saw during the summer. Because even though we talked about a lot of stuff on banter, there's still a lot of stuff we didn't talk about. Great films like Jurassic World 3
Oh, masterpiece.
and
Or Minions, man. You can't forget
Minions Rise of
Minions.
Gru. And
Yeah,
what
Citizen
else?
Kane has nothing.
What's another bad summer film? The Gray Man.
The Gray Man, most definitely. You can't forget
Firestarter.
about The Gray
Oh,
Man.
fire.
Yeah.
That was pretty good. You can enlighten us on Firestarter. I still haven't
Yeah.
seen that. Or what's that other Peacock horror film that came out that like people, what, it's
They
like about
Them.
they them, yeah, the one about like a gay conversion camp or something.
That one I was actually interested in seeing, and then I saw the reviews and I was like, well, I'm not gonna waste my time.
I'm horrified
I
by
don't know,
that film because
maybe
it
you could
sounds
talk
so
about
offensive.
Calvin Mosley's short film, Is It Worthy? I mean, I think that was a great short
Oh, that
film.
was my favorite film of the summer, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Favorite
It
of
was
all
better,
time, guys.
unironically better than Thor 4. I'm not even kidding.
Yeah,
So,
unironically, yeah. 10 out of
anyway,
10, Calvin. 10 out of 10.
tune in next time where we talk about other great summer films. And until then, I've been Matthew.
I've been Orson.
And I've been Daniel.
And we'll see you all next time. Bye bye.